Silence!
Oppenheimer!
I think they're talking about us. No way.
I myself am strange and unusual.
This is Nerd Pride Radio!
Nerd alert!
These nerds are a threat to our way of life.
See, this is the stuff that brings nerds together.
So it's sort of social. Demented and sad, but social, right?
If I'm interested in it, then by definition, it is nerdy.
Are you in loser denial or something?
I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty proud of it.
My dad's a nerd.
And welcome to episode 104 of Nerd Pride Radio. 104? No, please. Let me just read them out of Wikipedia. 104, the number of Corinthian columns in the Temple of Olympian Zeus, largest temple ever built in Greece. 104, the number of guns on Admiral Horatio Nelson's flagship HMS Victory. 104, the number of keys on a standard Windows keyboard. 104, the number of symphonies written by Joseph Haydn, upon which the numbers are agreed, because, though in fact he actually wrote many more of them, 104 is only the ones. Anyway, look at that. Nerdy, historical and pedantic. So many to choose from. Oh, 104 is a good number. So, ask me how I'm doing today. Go on. Ask me. I am awesome. My name is Mike Jones. I am a D&D/Pathfinder nerd, a history nerd, a sci-fi nerd, a comic book nerd, computer nerd, movie nerd, comedy nerd, science nerd, gaming nerd, plus like seven of the kinds of nerd I only wish I was nerdy enough to be. You're listening to Nerd Pride Radio, the place I go every week to haver on about all the nerd stuff that just won't fit in my skull anymore. As always, you're listening to the best-smelling podcast on the internet. That's right, Nerd Pride Radio smells exactly like reckless optimism. Oh, before I start, really quick, we went tanking yesterday. You been tanking? Oh, this was great. Apparently, you get out on the river, and they put you in a cow tank with a picnic table in it. It's a big old eight foot water tank like they would use for cows, but instead, they use it for people to float down the river. And so we sat in the cow tank with our picnic table, and the kids dove in and out of the tank repeatedly for about three and a half hours while we floated down river. And we had a blast. Check out my Facebook page and look at the pictures, because it was an awesome time. I don't know if you guys have this in the rest of the country, but here in Nebraska, oh, this was awesome. All right, but anyway, before I get into the meticulously plotted portion, what do I got? That's right, I got a little bit of feedback and a little bit of static in the line there. I don't know what that was. Hopefully I cleaned that up. You guys won't even notice, I hope. Last week, on episode 103, I recommended the Black Tapes podcast, which really completely totally rocks socks. And the feedback from you guys is, I'm right, it totally rocks socks. So I've decided to also start listening to Lore, based on other recommendations around the Black Tapes podcast. Thank you, Sarah Beth, and the guys from the Thrilling Adventure Hour podcast. I've also been listening to Stuff You Missed in History Class and No Such Thing as a Fish. These are all more educational than the stuff I've had before, because I found out that most of the podcasts I've been listening to, I've kind of gotten this theme going where most of them are comedians talking to other comedians, and because every comedian in the world has a podcast. And while they're entertaining, they also become all very similar over time. And I realized I wasn't enjoying them as much as I used to. So I've held on to a couple. I'm still listening to Nerdist and a couple others. But I've decided to really switch up, and I'm really enjoying the new ones. So anyway, for what it's worth, but Black Tapes, if you aren't listening to the Black Tapes podcast, what, you never listen to me? Get out there, start listening. It's really, really good. Everybody agrees. But enough of that. It's time for the meticulously plotted portion of this podcast. This is the time for me when I talk about whatever's been on my mind for the last week. If something strikes me as interesting during the course of my busy week, I add it to my master list in my handy-dandy pocket mod, and the best stuff off that list gets spewed out all over you guys every week when I record. You lucky dogs. And this has been an eventful week because I lost my pocket mod. just gone. For those of you who don't know, my pocket mod is the little folded sheet of paper. Pocketmod.com. Go get instructions for folding your own. Super handy. It's like carrying a little notebook in your pocket all the time. And they're disposable, as this one just apparently wandered away on its own. And as it turns out, I had so much stuff going on this week that I didn't even miss it because I just folded up a new pocket mod. And I have so much on it that this podcast today is overflowing. I will get to as much as I can, and then we'll just shove the rest over to next week. You know how we do. So right into the master list. First on my list, a nerd culture report.
I thought this was bowling for weirdos.
No, Gonzo, but you are very, very close. But actually, before I get into the nerd culture report, by the way, thank you everybody who made mention of it. I was very sick on last week's podcast and muscled through it. And I've still, my chest still hurts a little bit, got a little bit going, but my voice is better. So hopefully, since all I'm doing is sitting and talking, I'm pretty sure I can get through this one. We should be all right. But again, thank you everybody for saying something. I appreciate it. I'm doing much better now. Here's what I got. And this is, I say Nerd Culture Report because the people I'm going to talk about today, let me just take them in order. I'll start off with Kelly Hartnett, who is, she has a blog, kellyhartnett.com, and it is Kelly with an EY and Hartnett with two E's, or two T's on the end. I should probably put a link to it in the show notes. I will work really hard to remember to do that because this is a great blog and you should check her out. And she is a self-described word nerd and always has been. I knew her in high school and she was, in fact, the very first girl I ever asked out on a date in high school, which is slightly pedantic because before that, I also asked out Lisette Dozier and Sherry Barbier, but those were when I was 12 and they don't count as much. So Kelly would be the first girl that I asked out on a date in high school. And, she soundly rejected me. So just, she was very, very nice about it. She was very sweet. I very socially awkward, but we were friends. And, in her blog, I'm trying to organize my thoughts as we go. I actually wrote out stuff today because I didn't want to miss anything, and I still am having trouble finding the words. To start off, kellyhartnett.com, go check out her blog because she's interesting. She's interesting and fascinating, and her words are powerful. She's good at what she does. And first thing you need to know about her, Kelly is a woman of faith. It is one of her defining characteristics. Colors everything she writes, but in a very, very awesome way. I started reading her blog a long time ago. She discussed a lot of issues, came back regularly to the issue, one that was a sticking point for her, the issue of sexual preference and same-sex marriage. And at the time, I just kind of dismissed what she was writing because at the time it felt, I don't know, really wishy-washy, kind of apologist. Like she was jumping through hoops to justify her church's position on homosexuality. And as it turns out, the reason it sounded like that is because she was, all right? And all of that changed this summer. In fact, do you remember my episode at Scout Camp? I almost brought all this up at Scout Camp in that episode, but I didn't have I wanted to do it justice. I didn't have enough time to really process it back then. But while I was at Scout Camp, I read her blog where she actually worked for her church, and she quit her job over this, all right? Because it turns out that the previous gyrations that she had been going through on this topic were exactly because she was a representative of her church. And so therefore she couldn't say anything that directly contradicted church doctrine. And yet she was also trying to justify because anyway, turns out that because of her support, of same-sex marriage, she quit her job. She left her job because she had to be true to who she was. I don't know if I can explain how monumental that was. And this journey of hers, at least in part, is chronicled in her blog, and you should really go read it and follow it because it's fascinating. It's powerful. And I have so much respect for what she did. I mean, that to quit your job over a matter of moral principle, that because you have to be yourself to leave a job when you've got, you know, family, kids, you've got, that's huge. All right. And while I was at camp, and this was part of why I was going to bring it up right away, the outpouring of love and support for her on her blog and on her Facebook page was just overwhelming. I don't know if there were negative comments about it from other people. I didn't read any of those. I didn't see any of those. I just saw hundreds of comments of telling her how awesome she was and how good she was doing and how proud people were of her and absolutely should be. It was really, really cool. And so I've continued reading her stuff. Every time a post comes up that says she's got a new blog entry, I am right on it. And it's wonderful because she is no less a woman of faith now than she was before she decided to no longer work for this church. Rather, she is actually just simply being a more authentic human being. Again, authenticity, being true to herself. It's a theme that is resonating with me powerfully here. Standing up for what she believes in an amazing way. And this is, picture it. It has to be incredibly unsettling for her. I mean, that's a hard road to walk. She was a very integral part of this community. This is where her friends were, her support structure, her job. And to walk out on that aspect of it over this, I admire her bravery. All right. And so now you've gone back and you've read that particular blog post. You've seen, that turning point for her and it's really cool. You witness this transition. Now, read everything else she's written. Keep following it, as I've done. I absolutely love her style. Oh, that was my son. Hi, Aiden.
Hi.
I love her style because Kelly is not confrontational. I mean, she's posting about things that are incredibly important to her, things that she feels she has to get out there, and is not confrontational in the way she does them. She argues points from a place of sympathy, a place of compassion, okay? She argues for understanding, equality, civil discourse, all right? And this is where my words are feeling a little inadequate here. So I'm going to try and get through this and again, you know, forgive me if I don't hit this right on. But she's doing two things here. When she brings up a point of faith or morality, or just, you know, human existence that is important to her, she does two significant things. One, all right, there's this stereotype of Christianity out there, that, you know, all Christians tend to be, you know, hardcore, racist, homophobic, gun-toting, Republican, people who enjoy nothing more than oppressing minorities, trampling the rights of others, et cetera, et cetera. And that is a horrible stereotype, and the left out there perpetuate that when they're making their own points. Even though, again, I side with the left on most issues, it bothers me to see them characterizing their opposition in that way. And Kelly, I think, is giving a voice to a very large number of wonderful Christians out there who truly believe in compassion and understanding and love and are not a part of that ugly, ugly stereotype that is just not fitting to because most people, when you get to know them, are human beings, it turns out. Surprise. And again, she is giving a wonderful voice to that segment that doesn't get heard enough because when you're speaking reasonably about a topic, that doesn't make headlines. All right. I try very, very often to speak, you know, reasonably about things. I try and view both sides of an issue. I try and, you know, see both sides and understand, yeah, okay, they disagree with me, but why do they disagree with me? What about that makes it so important to them? And it is a tough thing to do because those voices are just not out there. They're just not. Because again, it doesn't make headlines. It doesn't, you know, someone who's speaking reasonably isn't the person that gets a million shares and likes and forwards on Facebook or on other social media. It doesn't happen. It's the inflammatory stuff. So it's good to see that voice. I love that. I appreciate that. And the other thing that she's doing, and it's tied directly into that. These overlap. She's not preaching to the converted. Okay. So many people, even when I agree with them, are spouting off about why their side is right, why they're correct about stuff. And they do it with the implicit assumption that people who disagree with them are not only wrong, but are also ignorant, mean, potentially even willfully evil. That's one of the easiest ways to get your message out there is to characterize your opposition as evil, to characterize your opposition as mean, stupid, cruel. And again, that's not usually the case. Usually people have very good reasons that don't involve evil and hatred and ignorance for believing what they believe. And I mean, seriously, if you're against abortion, then obviously you must hate women and want to oppress them, for example. And so as I'm reading Kelly's stuff, she makes no such assumptions, or at least she seems to try very hard not to. And her target audience, because of where she has come from, her target audience includes a lot of people who are, at this point in their lives, against marriage equality, or at least are struggling with that issue or similar issues. And she is addressing those people directly, all right, to say to them, you know, I know where you're coming from, but have you tried looking at it like this? I understand why this is important to you, but here also, can you see the other side's point of view? And it is, again, that's a hard job. That's a hard job. I mean, you're walking into the lion's den and trying to sway people. You know, we've all seen hate and rhetoric flying around Facebook, other social media, everywhere on the internet, constantly with the hate. And it doesn't change people's minds. I mean, it's honestly, most of that stuff, and we all know this, it's all cheerleading to make us feel superior and confident because, you know, hey, we're okay in feeling the way we do because the other side is a bunch of horrible people. All right. You're only, again, preaching to the converted. You're out there making your statements to make you feel good about the side that you're on, not to actually convince the other people. No one from the other side is ever going to be swayed just because you've presented a list of 15 facts that prove that Obama's a criminal. That doesn't convince anybody. That's only, again, it's just bolstering your own side without actually doing anything to try and meet the other side on middle ground and work out understanding, solve problems, do something. And I feel like when I read Kelly's stuff, I feel like she is working to change hearts and minds. Is that cliche? Does that sound? I'm being a little trite, aren't I? But it's true. I feel like, I don't know, all of this, I feel like my words aren't quite enough. But I like what she's doing. I've said it before, I strive to do that sort of thing in my own discourse. I'm taking cues from her, and I admire what she's doing. So anyway, I feel like I completely have not captured the essence of what she's about. But you should go check it out for yourself, kellyhartnett.com. Go out and read her blog and check her out. And especially, you can read some of the earlier stuff, but especially starting from that turning point where she just really seems to come in her own. And that's – when was that? I went to scout camp in the first week of July, so it would have been somewhere around there. So for the last couple of months, like I say, she just really it's powerful. So go check it out. Also, the other person that I want to talk about right here, and this is someone I've talked about before, but it overlaps. I was seeing some similar themes. They're very different people, but some similar themes in the area of authenticity and being yourself, being true to who you are. You remember when I talked about Hannah Hart a while back? Her YouTube channel is MyHarto, MyHarto. And Hannah Hart, I first caught on to her because of My Drunk Kitchen. That was the name of her primary series that she was running on YouTube. And My Drunk Kitchen is Hannah in her kitchen, drunk, trying to cook something. And that's all it is. And it's just, it's cute and it's light and there's something so charming about her. I love watching her. And it's, I said this last time I brought her up, is that you look at her and you're like, oh, God, wouldn't you have loved to have that friend when you were in college? Someone just like that? Wouldn't that have been so much fun? Because she just seems like so much fun to hang out with. But that's how you get hooked, is watching My Drunk Kitchen. But then slowly, I start watching all of her other videos and materials. I mean, she's not just a YouTube personality. She's also, she's been making TV appearances now. She's an author. And she's just funny and genuine and a lot of fun to watch. And, recently she did a video on YouTube entitled, I'm Secure. Let me make sure I got it correct. The YouTube video by Hannah Hart is I'm Insecure and You Can Too. And it is her, she sat down to talk about some other topic entirely. She was going to talk about something related to sex and sexuality, and she became overwhelmed with this position of realizing that, wait, I'm a really insecure person. Holy crap. And she's basically coming out as an insecure person. And it's just, it's moving and powerful. And, And I listened to her in an interview just recently on The Nerdist, where she's talking to Chris Hardwick about that video, about being insecure. And they spent a lot of time talking about being true to yourself and being an authentic human being. And I just found it all really powerful. And so, again, check out Kelly Hartnett, kellyhartnett.com, and check out Hannah Hart at MyHarto on YouTube. And they are both fascinating, wonderful people, and I am glad to share them with you guys, because it's what I do. All right, but, okay, that's enough of the serious portion of the show. What's up next?
And now for something completely different.
That's right. It's time for something completely different. This just stuff that I don't have a category for yet. This one is just a little bit of relationship advice, friendship advice, marriage advice, however you want to take this. But it occurred to me as I was listening to some discussions from other people this week, how many people don't realize this. When you're in social situations and you need to decide on what you're going to be doing next, for example, we need to know where we're going to go eat. We need to decide what movie we're going to watch, what movie we're going to go to, or what movie we're going to rent. We need to decide, you know, what we're making for supper tomorrow night. Okay. In every one of these situations where you've got two or more people trying to come to a consensus on what we really ought to do, quit worrying about a consensus. Take turns. Oh, it's so easy. Take turns. All right. And this sounds like really overly simplistic advice, but holy crap, you will not believe how much trouble it saves you, how much discussion and worrying about. Because here's the thing. Well, I don't know. What do you want for supper tonight? I don't know, you want to go do Chinese food again? Well, we just did Chinese food. I mean, I could do Chinese, but you want to, I don't know, you want to hit up that new Italian place? Well, I could if you want to. All right. And you go back and forth, and then you worry about, well, are they saying that just to be nice to me, or do they really want to do this, or do you want to do this? You know what? Don't have a discussion about it. Take turns. Literally, just go in order. All right. So between me and my wife, we started this probably in our first or second year of marriage. I think it was her idea, and it was brilliant. All right. Whenever it's time to go out to eat for any reason, we just take turns. And as we had kids, we just added them into the rotation once they were old enough to tell us where they want to eat. And so when it's your turn to pick where we're getting food or where we're going out to, when it's your turn, you can't pass. You have to take your turn. And once you make your pick, nobody else is allowed to complain about it in any way whatsoever. That's it. All right? So if the 7-year-old picks McDonald's every couple of months when his turn comes around and he's going to have McDonald's every time and we're all sick of it because we don't want to eat at McDonald's every time, tough. That's his pick. All right? He's 7. That's what he likes best. Great. That's going to be his pick, and no one else can complain about it. And you really can't skip your turn because, again, that's the I don't feel like deciding tonight. You come. No, you know what? When it's your turn, pick something. Same thing with going out to movies or renting movies, although not that you rent movies anymore, but deciding what movie you're going to get off of Netflix tonight. All right. Well, we actually also have thrown into the mix the Instant Roku where we have a random number generator that picks out what movie we're going to watch because we think that's hysterical. But honestly, when it comes time to decide what movie you're going to watch, take turns. All right. Oh, look, it's Jacob's turn to pick a movie. He hates horror movies. He picks something, you know, something romantic comedy. He picks an action movie. He picks whatever he wants to pick. Something he's excited about seeing. Great. We all sit down and watch that movie. Nobody gets to complain. And then when it's your turn, you can, because of that, you're now free. When your turn comes around, you don't have to feel guilty because, look, you picked whatever you wanted. We watched it. Nobody complained. In fact, we wound up enjoying it way more than we thought we would. Now that it's my turn, I don't have to feel guilty. I pick whatever I want. You don't pass over anything because, well, I don't know if he's really into that. I don't know if she wants to see this one. You know what? Doesn't matter. It's your turn. Oh, it works out so well. We do that. We take turns with movies. We take turns with meals. We take turns. It's so handy. Those are the big ones. Movies and meals. Trust me. Those are huge. And we just take turns. It's so easy. So I highly recommend it. Do that. You'll be amazed at how much heartache that saves you. All right. How much hemming and hawing every single time you need to do something. Oh, how often do you wind up wasting half an hour to 45 minutes because nobody's willing to make a decision? Well, guess what? You don't get that luxury anymore. is you turn around and you go, Bob, it's your turn. And then Bob says, oh, all right, I guess we're going to El Mezcal. All right, we all go to El Mezcal. Done. See how easy that was? Oh, you'll love this. Really, try it out. Just give it a few weeks. See what you think. If I'm wrong, call me an idiot and stop doing it. But trust me, you're going to love this. All right, that's enough of that one. Next up, the science corner.
Oh, she blinded me with science.
She blinded me with science.
Blinded me with science.
And that music means if you don't walk away now, you might be in danger of learning something. All right, you guys know how much I love my smart cars, right? Oh, I want a self-driving car so bad I can taste it. Okay. It turns out, when it comes to the issue of traffic, the state of Utah has control over all their traffic signals in the whole state. Oh, wait, okay. Not all of them, but like 80% of the traffic signals in the entire state of Utah are all centrally accessible. So you can literally monitor them from a central station somewhere, and people who are in control of these things, the traffic controllers, if you will, have the ability to change the timing on the lights remotely. Within 30 seconds, you can see that there's an issue coming up. We've got things backed up here, heavy traffic coming this way, and they can remotely make changes to the traffic signals. 80% of their lights are all controllable. How awesome is that? Okay, but you know what? That wasn't good enough for Pittsburgh. All right? Pittsburgh has started making smart traffic signals. All right? 49 of them they've got so far on their main thoroughfares. And smart traffic signals, yeah, okay, we've still got the sensors out there, sensors for vehicles and pedestrians and speeds, and we've got cameras up there that monitor stuff and feed information in. But now, there's no people making decisions. No, the traffic signals themselves are smart enough to monitor the traffic flow, and they've got algorithms plugged into them that say, hey, if you're seeing this kind of traffic pattern at this time of day, change things up. Come on, let's slow this down, or let's move this over here, or let's give more time for the left turn signal, or whatever it is they need to do. They've got 49 of them, and the traffic signals in Pittsburgh all talk to each other, which means that, hey, I'm changing up my traffic signal, which means you guys, the three lights that are all downstream from me, you're going to see this kind of traffic pattern coming off of my light. And they all go, oh, okay, cool. And the traffic lights all change themselves up in order to match that pattern and accommodate for what's going to be coming. All right. 49 lights all tied together. What does that mean? I can't remember the exact numbers. It is something like a 40% reduction in travel times and idle times. It was either like 40% reduction in travel time and a 25% reduction in idle time, or vice versa, something like that. But it's cutting their travel time, speeding things up while reducing congestion, and you're seeing a 20% reduction in vehicle emissions over that. So it's green on top of everything else, all right? But that's not good enough either. You know what the next step is? All right, not only do you get all the light, eventually you get all of your lights in the city are all smart traffic lights, and they're all talking to each other. All the signals are communicating back and forth. Oh, yeah, you know what the next step is? They start talking to your cars. We have enough smart cars out there that even if the cars aren't self-driving yet, although they should be, even if the cars aren't self-driving yet, the cars know enough to tell the lights when they're going to be there, to tell the lights that, hey, this is my destination. Here's what we're doing on the GPS. Here's my destination. And now the lights can start accommodating for, oh, all right, well, we know where half the people out here are going, so we can anticipate that these traffic patterns are going to do this. They get even better at what they're doing. Okay, so now you get fully smart self-driving cars and fully smart traffic signals. And, oh, man, we'll be so efficient. And I won't have to drive. That'll be the best part. I can just sit there and play on my phone the entire way. I can get my emails done. I can prep my podcast. I can play on my forums at nerdprideradio.com/forums. I can do whatever I want.
Or even record a new Dr. Noah.
Oh, all right. Hold on. Come here, Dr. Noah.
I have a new episode coming out very soon, in the next week or so. Because I just started it up, and it's a week-long thing.
That's Noah, and if you haven't seen the original Dr. Noah, I'll try and remember to put a link, but otherwise, Go look on YouTube. Go look for Dr. Noah Super Bouncy Ball. I talked about it when we first put it out. And it's been, how long has it been since we did the first Dr. Noah? Like a year? Year and a half? It's been a long time. I got kind of, the first time we did it, we had so much trouble with the video and getting it put together. It was worth it in the end, but it wound up just becoming this intimidating thing because, anyway, there's all sorts of stuff behind it. But finally, this weekend, we're like, you know what? Enough of this. Let's just get off our butts. Let's just get one done. And I'll give you the teaser. He's going to grow a dinosaur. Okay. That's all you need to know.
Hey!
Nope. Oh, okay. I didn't say that. Don't get either way. It winds up being there's actually several parts to it, and it's a long experiment. So we started tonight. We did the preliminary filming for it, and Noah was very proud of himself. He wrote out much of the script himself, and he's very happy with how it's coming out. It's going to be very cute and very educational. So hopefully in a week or two, I'll be able to come on episode 105 or 106 and tell you guys that there's a new Dr. Noah out there. You have something else to add, Mr. Noah?
Also, here's a question from it. Why does science have to be so much waiting? It's like 90% waiting and 10% actual science.
This is Noah's observation about science. Why is there so much waiting in science? Because that's just how it's done. It's not at all like watching CSI where they or SVU or NCIS or any other acronym where they get their DNA results back that afternoon if it's an emergency. I mean, if you need to put a rush on it, we can get it back in a couple of hours. No, science involves a lot of waiting, apparently, and we're learning that the hard way. But it's all very fun and very educational, and we're having a good time with it. So hopefully. Episode 2 of Dr. Noah will be coming out soon. And then, you know, hey, again, being ambitious, I would love to see us do another Dr. Noah maybe every month or two. I mean, I don't want to, because when it's not just me talking on a microphone, when we actually have to, he's got a very specific visual style he's going for, and we have to write out scripts, and we have to make sure that we actually have science to go with, because a lot of kids, quote-unquote science experiments, don't necessarily involve a lot of science, or if they do, you actually have to do a lot of research to find out what that science is and why it's relevant, why it's important. And this one apparently turns out to involve some really pure chemistry that is super cool. So we're excited about it. So I was wondering, I'm sitting here doing my science corner, and I'm talking about traffic lights on my science corner. And as soon as I said science corner, he came running around this corner and got lined up on the microphone. I'm like, what is he so excited about? He doesn't even know what I'm talking about here. Oh, that's right. Dr. Noah. I forgot we had that coming. So look forward to that, because I certainly am. Do I have anything else to say about traffic signals? No, I'm just really, really excited about self-driving cars, but you know that already. So enough of that. Let's move into my gaming table.
I've got Dungeon Master's Guide. I've got 12-sided die.
That's right, role-playing games, video games, board games, card games, any games. If it fits on my gaming table, I'm here to share it with you. And what do I have on my gaming table? Oh, we played some more Pathfinder, and the only thing I have to say about that is fairy dragons are cute. Oh, he's adorable. You know what? Even when his friends are dying and he's bawling, oh, that dragon is cute. Even when he is frothing at the mouth and swearing vengeance upon their souls. Adorable. Okay. So, I'm sorry. Riddy Whipple the fairy dragon is just slaying me. I love this guy. But enough about him. we're going to see him get vengeance next week. And, it's going to be super exciting. Or 2 weeks from now. 2 weeks from now. Oh, I hate having to wait so long. Anyway, it's a great game. But also on my gaming table, this one's fast. We've got on my forums at nerdprideradio.com/forums, if you weren't aware, we've got the, I don't remember what, it's called Kill It, but there's a thread, it's the You Can't Kill This thread. And we do this periodically, and the point of the game is you have to be the last person to post in the thread, and then no one posts after you for 24 hours solid. If that happens, if you are the last person to post with a 24-hour gap after you, you win. And that's all there is to it. And Sometimes it's over in 3 or 4 days. Sometimes it takes a year and a half. But and that's, I think that's what we're going to be working up to on this one. In fact, oh, guinea pigs. Darn them. I think that's maybe what we're coming up to on this one, is that it's going to be a really long one, because here's what's going on now. Out of nowhere, most of the time this thread is just people posting nonsense. We put up pictures, we do stupid non sequiturs. It's basically just anything to keep the thread going. That's all you have to do. And so my brother, out of nowhere, starts acting like we're playing a game of Pathfinder in there. And he starts asking people for reflex saves and skill checks. And he starts narrating stuff. And we all decided we'd start acting as if we were the worst group of players ever. So we got to be whiny and rules lawyery and overly offended and demanding. And it was funny to us. Okay. And so my brother then decides that he's going to pull the ultimate game master move and start jerking us around for being disruptive. And so I had made this long, whiny complaint about, what is this? Is this your new train simulation? Because I feel like I'm being railroaded here. And I went on about what a horrible game master he was, because he wasn't giving us our free choice. Whatever. All right. So then, just a couple of moves down the road, all of a sudden, as I'm getting thrown through the air, long story, a train comes slamming through the wall of the room we're in the game. I wind up landing in a train car, and then boom, the train goes rocketing out the other side and disappears. So now my brother's working with me by private message, and we're still doing this whole role-playing business, trying to tell this story as I'm on the train trying to figure out how the heck to get off. And he keeps giving me clues that essentially he's given me from the Necronomicon from Army of Darkness. He's given me the Necronomicon, and he's telling me, well, he's not telling me. It's the hint is that if I read from the Necronomicon and I say the words, I will wind up getting myself transported back. Well, I miss out on that, okay? And it's Klaatu Verata Nikto. That's the words from Army of Darkness. Well, I'm not getting it. Well, Klaatu Verata Nikto is actually based on The Day the Earth Stood Still, and the key phrase in that movie was Klaatu Barada Nikto. All right, very close. And so the robot from The Day the Earth Stood Still shows up in the train car and starts, I start getting hints that, and I'm still not picking up that these are the words I should be saying. I'm still not getting it. All right, so the robot winds up whipping out laser vision and starts etching it onto the glass so I can start seeing the words spelled out, as if, because I need a neon glowing sign. And ultimately, I finally figure it out. And just as I'm figuring it out, by the way, the next thing I do is I go, oh, wait a minute. I get it. I'm being railroaded. Oh, I get it. I complained about being railroaded, and so you threw me on a train and railroaded me. I get it. I felt like such an idiot. I mean, honestly, I felt like such an idiot. A, I honestly had no clue about the railroading joke until that moment. I mean, days later, we've got like 20, 30 posts have gone back and forth between us trying to sort this out, more than that even. And he's just dropping me hint after hint after hint, and it took me forever to pick up on it. I felt like an idiot. But here's the thing. A, I'm having a lot of fun with it. It's just goofy fun. No one's taking it seriously at this point. It's just a throwaway story sort of thing to entertain us while we're in this thread. We have to be there anyway. But it does remind me that, yeah, you know what? It doesn't take much to role play. You know, you want to start doing a storytelling game. Again, all you got to do is just start telling a story and telling other people that they're involved with it, and they'll start playing. That's, how many episodes ago was it that I talked about that with my son and his friends, that they will do it by text message, that someone will just send someone a text message that just starts a role play. It just starts out, here's, you know, they give the intro to a story and they send it to somebody by text. So the other person responds with their actions within the story, or their response to the story, or their continuing paragraph for it. And then they just go back and forth, and you do it with just two people, and you wind up doing this long role-playing storytelling bit that can go on for months. And, you know, and it doesn't involve any rules. It doesn't involve any dice. It doesn't involve any of the traditional role-playing game elements. It's just two people telling a story together. And I feel like that's kind of what we're doing here. My brother, he keeps asking us to roll dice, and everyone keeps saying that they're rolling dice. I assume most people are, just because that's kind of how obsessive we are. Me personally, I'm always wearing my spinner ring, so I always have a random 1 through 20 generator on my hand. So I'm actually spinning mine and giving him the real results as we go. But we don't have to. I mean, if we were just making up numbers, he will take whatever we give him. I mean, we could be lying completely, and he'll just play with it, because the numbers really don't matter as long as you're telling an interesting story. So it's just, I don't know, the whole thing fascinates me. Just fascinates me. And we're having a lot of fun doing it. So, and I think, I don't know if Kyle's intending to turn this into something more serious. I don't know if we're going to continue on in this vein and it's just us goofing around. I have no idea which way he's going with it. I'm happy to play along no matter what happens, but it has inspired me to think that maybe I'll try another one of these later. One of these, cause for a while we did I was doing an imitation of a text-based game like Zork. I was doing an imitation of that, and essentially I would post up what the computer would tell you in such a game, and then the players, anyone who posted, whoever posted up, could play. And so it was only one character in the game, but basically they'd give me a move, and it has to be something simple, like a command that would have been accepted in Zork. So, you know, go north, okay, and then I'll type what happens when you go north. Or, you know, grab hammer. Okay, you've got the hammer. It was that kind of thing. And we played that one for a little while, and then it just kind of trailed away. But I really liked that, and I'm thinking of reviving that after Kyle gets done with what he's doing. Which, you know, again, these unkillable threads go on forever, so this may last a while. But it has inspired me to think that maybe I'll try another one of those. Do another Zork-style text-based game. And again, that way it's easy, because you don't have to wait on specific players to show up. It's whoever comes in and makes a move gets to make the move. You don't have to wait around at all. So we'll see. We'll see how that goes. But guess what? Oh. We are
Did I show up just in time?
Yes, you showed up just in time. My son Aiden has a sense of these things, because we are completely done with the meticulously plotted portion of this podcast. And that means it's time for the
Pod-O-Matic.
Hot dog. This is the Nerd Pride Radio Pod-O-Matic. At the end of every cast, I bring out R2 and his fully pimped out Pod-O-Matic bubble. He rolls up random topics for me to talk about. And where do these topics come from, you ask? You are asking, aren't you? Well, that is where you come in. You want to hear me haver on about something? You send your question or topic to me by email, or better yet, in a private message on my forums at nerdprideradio.com/forums, and I will add it to my Pod-O-Matic list. Pod-O-Matic is about whatever you want it to be. And emergency call, we're running out of Pod-O-Matics. I have
What? How?
Well, okay, when I say running out, I mean we have 102. All right, and if I don't have 100, I don't have a full list anymore. And so therefore, I'm running out of Pod-O-Matics. So, and I'm telling you guys, if I don't get enough to fill up a list, we're going to have blank spaces. Every blank space that comes up, I'm just going to sit there quietly staring at the microphone for 2 minutes. That's your punishment for not getting me enough source material here.
This is literally a call for help.
This is my cry for help. So, what would make this really, really interesting is if I already had the Pod-O-Matic list open and I wasn't stalling for time. But I am. It's how I do. All right. Here it is, and our first number is 97. Thank you, R2. 97 is from Mrs. Darks. All right, Mrs. Darks says, what is your favorite TV show from the 80s?
I know. It's that one interchangeable blonde hero with the magic sword.
No. That's a kid's cartoon, and I'm not. And Thundar, while I did enjoy Thundar as a kid, that's not the one. I would say my favorite TV show from the 80s, as a cheat, I would probably say Star Trek The Next Generation, because they started in like 89. So even though it was really more of a 90s show, or did they start in 87? Or they were the end of the 80s and then they wrapped around into the 90s. But that was really the greatest show to come out of the 80s. It absolutely was, without a doubt. But you know, the 80s is such a long span. I mean, this is everything that I watched from, you know, from the time I was 10 to the time I was 19 or 20 in college. So it covers a lot of years. But I also, shows that I loved when I was younger, I loved Buck Rogers in the 25th century. Going back now, I realize it was really stupid. I get it. I'm right there with you. Horrible, horrible show. But at the time, I thought Buck Rogers was awesome. I thought that stupid robot Tweaky, that stupid R2-D2 ET knockoff, I thought he was really cool. I thought Erin Gray was super hot, and she was. I loved the show at the time. But, you know, it was very much a kid's show. But, boy, we sat around as a family every week and watched that thing. I loved it. I also was a huge fan of Greatest American Hero, which I still maintain is a spectacular concept for a show. I've never gone back and watched Greatest American Hero, but I am guessing it holds up because it didn't take itself too seriously, and it was just a lot of fun. And Yancey and I were just talking not 2 weeks ago about how that show is due for a remake. We need to remake Greatest American Hero because it's cool. It's super cool. All right, and for those of you like my son here who aren't familiar with any of these concepts because you weren't alive during the 80s, Greatest American Hero was, all right, imagine if the alien came down and gave Green Lantern his Green Lantern ring and then didn't give him any instructions on how to use it. That's the premise of Greatest American Hero. An alien comes to Earth and grants this ordinary schlub a super suit that gives him all the powers of Superman, essentially, but gives him this super suit that lets him do all sorts of amazing things, and the instruction manual is missing. And so he has no clue how to use it. He knows he should be able to fly, because occasionally he will accidentally fly. He just has no idea how that happened. And so he keeps trying, and he keeps falling. And he tries to do all these amazing things, and he keeps failing, and he's slowly mastering the suit and trying to figure out how it works. And so the idea is just imagine, you know, this ultimate superhero who has no control over his abilities at all. And so it's a comedy, and it's fun. And I imagine because it was a superhero TV show from the 80s, I'm guessing it probably was really stupid in the plotting. I mean, you know, you got to imagine, how did a TV show like The Hulk ever stay on forever? I mean, that was in the 70s, but how did that stay on for so long when it's essentially The Hulk, but there's no other super people anywhere? It's The Hulk beating up thugs. How did he not kill 1,000 people in the course of that show? He's The Hulk. And somehow they made it work. And Wonder Woman, who is, again, the Wonder Woman TV show, did she ever fight superpowered bad guys? Did that happen very often?
No.
How would you know? You never watched the original.
I watch reviews on YouTube.
Oh, well,
Nerds like you yell about stuff exactly like you.
Bah humbug is what I say. But Greatest American Hero, definitely due for a remake. And Nathan Fillion just recently, when asked what superhero he would want to play, he said his first choice, Booster Gold. How funny is Booster Gold for Nathan Fillion? How right up his alley is Booster Gold as this guy who is in it for the advertising and merchandising, and he's a little full of himself and he's a little pretentious, and that's, oh, Booster Gold, Nathan Fillion, what a perfect combination. He said, or alternately, Ambush Bug, because he thinks Ambush Bug is an awesome hero, and he thinks it would be really funny for him to play a role where you never see his face. Much as Ryan Reynolds is doing with Deadpool. What a great idea. Or he said, he also thinks Greatest American Hero is really due for a remake, and he would love to play that role. And I'm like, dead on. So much fun. Go ahead. 30. All right, 30. Oh, I forgot the number of these. Hold on. 97 is number one. Otherwise, I'd lose track, and then you guys have to hear them repeated, so I'm sorry. You have to put up with my numbering system. All right, we go back up to number 30, and that is, oh, it's from my son Noah. Noah says, "How hard do you work every day?" Well, that's kind of a loaded question, son.
Now, son.
As it turns out, some days I work really, really hard. Some days, and I'm just talking in the course of my job, some days, I mean, we have a lot to do, and it involves heavy lifting, and it involves all sorts of tiring, stressful things. But, you know, those days are maybe every couple of months we have one or two of those. But then other days, I would say half the time, we're busy. I mean, I've got a lot of things to do, but it's, you know, filing paperwork or answering the phone, remote controlling someone's computer to walk them through the stuff they need to do. It's busy, but it's not difficult. I'm not working hard doing it. I'm just working constantly. And then there's some days, like the day right before Labor Day weekend, where there's nothing to do because I've already got all my work tidied up. I've taken care of most of the paperwork. I spent the day getting caught up on trainings that I had been, you know, slowly passing over because, oh, they're boring. They don't really apply to me, but they're listed on the mandatory list of trainings I have to read through. So I finally got caught up on trainings because there was nothing else to do. It's the Friday before Labor Day. Who's coming in to do anything then? Nobody. The building was empty. So as it turns out, Noah, a lot of times I don't work very hard at work, but most of the time I think it balances out. Most of the time I work, let's call it on a scale of 1 to 10. All right, well, let's say it's 0 to 10. 0 being no work and 10 being horrible back-breaking labor all day, every day. I would say my job's about a 3, really. All right, some days I have days that get up to a 5 or a 6, but really my job averages about 3 to 4. It's not that bad.
Your son just outed you in front of your whole fan base.
Hey, well, just come on. It's not that tough a job. Like I say, I got a lot to do, but it's not hard. So, 00. We're a winner.
Are we?
Yes, because 00 is from Billy Bob. And Billy Bob says, ooh, F, Mary, kill. It's an easy one. Monica, Rachel, Phoebe. Ooh. You got an opinion on this one? Of course he doesn't. This was before he was born. This is a 90s TV show, Friends. You've heard of Friends.
Oh, yeah, Joey.
Yeah, oh, yeah, Joey. That's all you know of Friends. That's sad.
That's all I know.
So sad. Monica, Rachel, Phoebe. What an...
Which one's the crazy one?
It depends on which season. They're all crazy off and on.
Well, then I have no strong opinions either way.
In fact, other than Joey, I think everybody on that show was crazy at some point or another. I would say... Monica would be the one to marry. She is, she's a little overbearing. Oh, maybe I couldn't marry her. She's a lot overbearing, very controlling. Man. All right, you know what? This is a tough one. But do you want to marry Phoebe? Because she's so out there. Rachel, I mean, I get that Jennifer Aniston is hot. I get that Rachel was hot, but that's not, that's not what I'm looking for. When I'm getting married, I'm looking at a personality type. I'm looking at who do I want to spend the rest of my life with? Who do I want to spend every day with? I'm going to go with Phoebe for the marriage. I really am. She's quirky and odd, and I think I really enjoy that. I like Phoebe. So if I marry Phoebe, now my choices are, I need to pick one of the other ones to have a one-night stand with and the other one to kill because those are the rules of the game. And it is a toss-up. I'll take Rachel for the one-night stand and I'll kill Monica. See, Monica, I almost married her. Now I got to kill her. See? That's sad. But, I'm going to stick with that. No other explanation. 53 is from... It's from Humongous. Hey, Humongous. Humongous says, hey, Aiden, have you played Munchkin before?
That isn't my name anywhere in that question.
Well, no, but he says, have you played Munchkin, and you're here, and it's a question you can answer.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I have. All the time.
Yeah, we love Munchkin. I mean, I don't know what else to tell you. Munchkin's a great game. In fact, not only have we played Munchkin, but we've got Munchkin, and then the expansion sets, Munchkin 2, Munchkin 3, Munchkin 4. I can't remember how many of them we got.
It's right there, actually.
Yeah, Munchkin is sitting right here on the table. I am staring at it. It is, and the box has been played so many times that the entire box is covered with duct tape just to hold it together. Because we love Munchkin. And if you open that box, we have a bunch of counters in there. We've got the little spinny counters to keep track of your levels, extra dice, and all sorts of stuff in there. And then, in addition to that, we own Space Munchkin and Zombie Munchkin and Pathfinder Munchkin and
Adventure Time Munchkin.
Adventure Time Munchkin, and I can't remember if we've got another one or not. There's so many out there.
We have Munchkin Dungeon or whatever that is.
Munchkin Dungeon, yeah. We don't have Munchkin Castle Panic. Munchkin Panic, I think, is what it is.
Is that really a thing?
Yeah. Well, I only thought of it because I'm sitting here right underneath the Munchkin box is the Castle Panic box. And there's a Munchkin Panic as well, but
We have them sitting on top of each other in order of descending like.
Yeah. Well, or actually in order of descending order of how often they've been played. So anyway.
Castle Race.
Which we haven't gotten to yet. But yes, we've played Munchkin and we love Munchkin. So it's an awesome game. The only person to never play Munchkin with is Lucy's husband.
I thought it was going to be Sam.
No. Lucy's husband, we played, and actually I think he would have been fine if it had just been adults, but we were playing with my kids there, and he's playing psychological games with, you know, an 11-year-old and threatening them and just flat out lying to them about the cards he has in his hand and just being, he is out to win. That man is out for blood when he plays a game. And I think if it had just been adults, it would have been fine. But, oh man, we finally had to lay down some rules. I did. I had to lay down some rules and go, dude, you can't do that. He's 11. Stop it. Man, he wanted to win. So, yeah, I'm sorry, Lucy. Maybe you aren't aware yet. Your husband's a little cutthroat. 83. 83 is from my wife, Lisa. Hey, Lisa. Lisa says, have you ever been in an earthquake? If so, tell about
it. Ooh, ooh, ooh. Tell about the one Popo was in.
That's the only earthquake I've ever been in. So we lived in Plattsburgh, New York, on the Air Force Base on General's Row, the huge houses. My dad wasn't a general, but we lived on the street. And it was called General's Row. It's actually U.S. Oval was the name of the street, but it was known as General's Row because it was housing for the generals and the higher ups. My dad was a squadron commander for a maintenance squadron at the time. And so we're in this huge 3-story house is where we lived. And something wakes me up. And I don't know what has woken me up, but something has woken me up. And all I can hear is this thudding, rumbling. I don't know what's going on, but it's rolled me out of bed. And so I go running over to my brother's room, and my brother's in a panic because he's telling me that he doesn't know what was going on. Everyone was thudding and pounding, and his bed was jumping. His bed was jumping, he tells me. We're freaked out because we have no clue what happened because it just woke us up. And by the time we got our bearings, it was all over, but it was like a magnitude 6 earthquake.
Magnitude 6.
Yeah.
That's some pretty serious stuff.
We weren't close enough to cause real damage. It didn't break anything in our house, but it did kind of jump things around. And so we're awake now and we have no idea what's going on. And now my dad is yelling. My dad is in a panic. All right, but his panicked voice sounds a lot like his angry voice. And so he's downstairs, boys, Mike, Kyle. All right. We're both afraid to answer because we don't know what just happened and we think we might be in trouble for it. We're not sure. So we're keeping quiet. And finally, we're like, what? So we go downstairs and they're like, oh, it was just panic. They just wanted to make sure we were okay. Oh, we get it. Oh, an earthquake. That's what that was? Holy crap. I feel like I missed out because I was asleep, and by the time I woke up, the earthquake was done. So I know I was in an earthquake. I just don't know what being in an earthquake is like. I feel like I really missed out on an opportunity there. But my dad, this is the best part, and it adds to his panic. My dad was on the toilet when it happened. And so when the house starts shaking, I mean, the toilet is jumping underneath his ass. That is funny. I mean, you just got to imagine this whole house swaying and jumping and rumbling, and he's on the toilet trying to, I mean, how fast can you wipe and get your pants up to go find out if your family is safe? I mean, do you just discount some of that because, oh my God, I need to go save my family, or, well, I should really wipe first. I should, yo, all right, I'll just yell. That's what I'll do. I'll yell. So. Anyway, yes, I have been in an earthquake, and that's what it was like. Okay, you gotta stop laughing. 47. And 47 is from Mrs. Darks again. All right, I've answered this one before. Do you prefer your dragons as foes or allies? And, well, if they're fairy dragons, allies? Holy cow, this guy is awesome. But I like them as both. I prefer them as foes because I'm usually a game master, and I prefer to have dragons as opposition because they're just fun to do. But go ahead, Aiden, you've got something to contribute to the dragon story?
Yeah. See, in our Pathfinder group, we just made a foe dragon a friend dragon.
I told them that.
Yeah.
Yes. They wound up bribing it. Apparently, if you give a dragon lots and lots of money,
well,
it's a little more amenable.
Not just lots and lots of money. Lots and lots of its own money.
Well, that's true. But then your brother turned into a were-sheep, and you guys kind of forgot about the dragon. So, anyway, yeah, I've answered that question before. Let's move on. 57. Let's see how this one works for us. 57 is from... it's from Ronster. All right. Ron says, BattleBots, for or against? Wool. What's to be against about BattleBots? What, I mean, if you've got to dislike sports because of violence, then how about a sport where it gets to be incredibly violent and nobody gets hurt? How awesome is that stuff? I love BattleBots. That when it was first on, I watched that thing religiously. I loved BattleBots.
Well,
was
there really a BattleBots religion?
No, but if you've never seen BattleBots. You don't know anything about
it.
Did you?
They still go on today. I've seen
BattleBots. Yeah, they brought them back. But, oh, BattleBots. Awesome show.
See,
yeah.
Like there's this one in a video I saw where it was just nothing but a robot with a present on its arms that exploded.
Okay. The BattleBots that were on TV had rules against exploding. So you couldn't use explosives.
Well, I mean, it wasn't really an explosive. It was more of an explosively powered net.
Ah, that's funny. See? But yes, I love BattleBots. 70. 70 is, again, from my wife, Lisa. And Lisa says, we know a few law enforcement officers fairly well and adore them, but there are officers out there who may be having a bad day or may be on a power trip. Tell about the rudest police officer or guard you have ever encountered.
Ooh, okay. I've got two of these.
Okay, what's yours?
The first one, the mild one, was the one that pulled you over during the day for having a headlight out.
Uh-huh.
He was pretty mean.
I don't remember that one.
Yeah, you got pulled over, broad daylight, for having a headlight out.
Oh, God, yeah, that was terrible. Oh, yeah, I hated that, although at least he didn't give me a ticket.
And, okay, this next guy wasn't being, per se, mean, but it was a severe inconvenience to my day. So I'm late for school, and I'm driving, following the speed limit. Nothing's wrong, I don't have a headlight or taillight out, but he just pulls me over. I'm like, oh crap, what'd I do? Think about this. Knocks on my window, shines the light at me, I roll down my window. Yes, officer? He takes a look at me and says, oh, you're not the one we're looking for. Carry on.
That's
like,
pretty good.
Wait, what?
Oh, that's
he
funny.
He leaves, I roll my window back up, and I drive to school.
Okay, no, the rudest police officer, you go back to episode 100 where I talk about Gen Con, and the police officer that yelled at us like we were babies because we were jaywalking, not that babies jaywalk often, but let's say small children, yelled at us for jaywalking, that jerk.
And it was like a good 5-minute rant.
Oh, it was terrible. But go back to episode 100 and listen to my jaywalking rant. It's right at the beginning of the... at the beginning of the podcast, and it's really, really funny. It was a terrible situation. I was humiliated.
Perfect crossing record.
Right, my perfect crossing record lost. But the worst I ever had for getting pulled over was I got pulled over when I was first moving to town here. I just left college, and I was moving here. Yeah, I'm moving here to town to be closer to my then-fiancé. And, you know, so I was going to move up here, find a place to live, find a job. And I've got everything I own in the back of my little Honda CRX. And the cop pulls me over, and I don't know why. I have no idea why he's pulled me over, but he's pulled me over, and I'm, you know, 22 years old. And he comes up, and he looks, and he can see in the back of my vehicle all of my possessions. And among them are two swords, because they were a gift from my parents when they were in Japan. And so he has to stop me and ask, oh, are those real swords? Like, well, yeah, but they're mostly decorative. It's a gift from my parents. They're not even sharp. I mean, they're pointy, but the blades aren't sharp. And it's like, oh, okay. And doesn't say another word about it. In fact, he wrote me out a ticket for speeding. I'm sorry, speeding? I was apparently doing what I can't remember. Was the speed limit still 55 back then? I think it was. I think the speed limit was still 55.
It was.
This was back in the Stone Ages. Yeah, you remember. This was still back in the Stone Ages. Assuming the speed limit was, well, and it was the road. It was the road to Stanton, so that one would have been 55 anyway. Anyway, he writes me a ticket for doing 58 miles an hour in a 55 zone. 3 miles over the speed limit, he wrote me a ticket. Oh, that was infuriating. Not even a warning, not a any, just wrote me a ticket. And you got to know me, when I get pulled over by the cops, I am the politest guy in the world. I am very respectful. I am very nice. I am very, plus, I don't know if you know me, but I'm also white. I can't imagine.
Why you gotta pull race into this?
I'm just being stereotypical that if a cop was going to have a problem with me, I don't fit their profiling demographic for people to hassle.
Speaking of profiling, you should hear Jacob's take on the Wayne police about that.
Really?
Yeah. His Hispanic friend got pulled over. And like, yeah, I've got a African-American map. Excuse me, I'm Hispanic. Never mind. And he left.
Okay, I've got to get the full story on that one. Is this his roommate?
Yeah.
Oh, God, that's funny. yeah, I'll have to get the full story on that. Anyway, no, again, I am super polite. I am super respectful. I will kiss up to a cop because that's the easiest way to get out of it. If they see that you're being contrite and you don't look like you're causing trouble. And I had gotten a haircut. I wasn't even the long-haired hippie I was in college. I was clean cut and getting ready for my marriage. I was not, you know, I wasn't giving him any hassle. And he wrote me a ticket for 3 miles over the speed limit. I am just, ew. That's the most annoyed I've ever been with a cop ever. Other than that, times that I've gotten tickets, I've deserved it. I'm not going to argue about that.
I mean, that time I blew up a bus full of nuns. And the times
that they've let me off with a warning when I probably didn't deserve it, I am eternally grateful for those. Thank you so much.
Come on, that's a little bit long time.
Well, they might be listening. Shut up. you know, I've always had a good relationship with cops because, again, you know, I'm an ordinary white middle-class dude. I'm not, you know. And so I'm not the guy to hassle. I don't understand why I would get a ticket. And I'm not saying, all right, now I do sound racist. I'm not, let me back up and say I deserve to get off of this ticket because I'm white. I'm playing a joke there. That is all for humor's sake because of the recent. Maybe I'm being insensitive. God! Thank you, R2. Whew! I thought I was going to have to justify myself on that.
Oh, nope, number 30. We're still on this.
No, 30. 30 is 30. From... Oh my god, we did do 30. Save me, 87. How'd you remember that?
Because I'm awesome?
I guess. Your young memory is way better than mine. This one's from my wife. And my wife says, "What is your spirit animal? That is, what animal are you most like?" Do you want to take this one?
The newt.
You're just making up something.
No. I'm like,
you have a justification for this?
Nobody ever recognizes the newt, ever. And I can adapt to most situations, such as the newt.
Wow, that's pretty good. Okay. If I had to have a spirit animal, I don't know what animal I most like. But I'll tell you what animal I want as a spirit animal. All right. And I've got several choices. And when I've played in games where, like Shadowrun, if you pick a shaman and you want to, you have a spirit animal for your shaman. The ones I've always picked have been weird ones.
Sheep.
Well, ones that have weird adaptations, ones that maybe are maligned in popular thought and culture, and yet turn out to be much more resourceful and interesting than you would have thought.
Like the sea cucumber.
Well, I had a possum shaman that I thought was awesome. Possum is a great one because possums, okay, granted, possums are stupid animals, dumb as a doornail, possums are. All right, but they have so many cool defenses. They're so interesting. I mean, one being the only marsupial native to the Western Hemisphere. They have their defenses that involve playing dead.
Regurgitating anything that they have.
Right. Vomiting. They are just... They're
God, the possum in our garage that one time. Oh,
disgusting. Disgusting. And so for similar reasons, the vulture. And if I had the option of picking octopus as a spirit animal, I would, simply because lately, octopi are so cool. Octopuses. Okay. I know what the dictionary lady said about octopuses versus octopi. And
you don't care.
Well, okay. Do you know the story? Did you see the video? Okay.
No.
The lady from, she's one of the editors of, I think, Merriam-Webster. And she has a whole video about whether, whether octopi or octopuses is the correct plural of octopus. And the answer is both. She said octopuses was the original. Octopus was a borrowed word from another language, and just standard English pluralization, you just add ES to it, so octopuses would have been the plural, and that's what we used for years. And then there was a movement over 100 years ago of people wanting to standardize English and come up with all these rules, and they decided that any word that we borrowed from Latin had to be pluralized as it would be in Latin. So therefore, instead of octopuses, it would be octopi. And then, as she points out, the problem with that is that we didn't get octopus from Latin. We got octopus from Greek. So if you want to use the Greek plural of it, it would be octopodes.
No, so, well, I thought you were going to say it would still be octopuses.
No, it's octopodes. And so therefore, according to her, she said, yes, octopuses was the original, but technically both octopuses and octopi are both correct.
And octopodes, apparently.
And octopodes, no one's ever used that except me.
I'm going to start.
You should. I just worked it into our last Pathfinder game. It was actually very funny. But having said that, what you're getting now is I'm seeing people who, after years of everyone's grown up thinking it's octopi, I have now seen a couple of people who have been very snotty about it online, pointing out that octopuses. Yes, that's right. Octopuses is correct.
Futurama did that.
And they're being very snotty about it. And I'm like, well, but there's no reason to be snotty. The dictionary lady didn't say that octopuses is correct. She just said it's the first one, but now they're both correct. And it's okay to use either one. And here's my bit, and this is how I've felt about English for a long, long time, is as long as you're communicating correctly, as long as you're communicating your message, you're doing all right.
Okay, can I revise
so
that?
So, therefore...
No, whoa, 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 whoa. As long as you're communicating correctly without using YOLO, swag, or LOL, then you're okay.
I can't use LOL? Can I use LOL?
Yes.
Okay, as long as I don't...
If you say out loud the word LOL, I will punch you in the face.
Okay, I'll accept that. That's fine. But again, if you're communicating... Then who cares? You can say octopi, you can say octopuses, and no one's going to question what your intent was on that. English is a fluid language and a wonderful language, and we need to quit tying it down and being all elitist about our own particular brand of English. So what?
We're elitist on fonts. You know this isn't going to stop.
Yeah, well, people are elitist. Well, no, people will be elitist about anything.
I was just saying that the most meticulous one that I know about would be fonts.
I wish I could remember what actor it was But someone said, and this will not be the correct actor, but someone said, look, if you have a group of people, you know, you have a group of 30 people and you lock them up somewhere and their only form of entertainment is 100 pictures of Edward James Olmos eating a sandwich for a year. By the end,
why is he eating a sandwich?
Doesn't matter. By the end of that year, they will have broken down into factions arguing over which ones of the pictures are best representations of Edward James Olmos eating a sandwich, and which ones have the most artistic merit, and which ones tell the best story about... They will... So...
It's only that funny because I know it would actually happen.
Right, that's the whole point. They really would. And again, that's not... Edward James Olmos was not the right actor. I can't remember who it was. It could have been anyone. It could have been Richard Dreyfuss. I have no idea.
Wouldn't any actor or actress actually work better in that one?
Yes, but, and again, I don't remember who said it originally, and I don't remember what actor they used, because I would like to give them credit for repeating their idea here, but I can't remember who it was, so we'll just call it good at that. One more, and then we'll be done.
So that means three more.
16. I have been really good lately about not going over. I'm actually still hoping to watch a movie with your mom tonight, so.
Yeah, we'll watch a movie with your mom.
Hey, speaking of your mom... your mom writes in and says, who is your favorite comedian and why?
Bo Burnham.
Why?
Because he's, yes, he does a lot of smut, but only because he knows that that's the only way people listen nowadays.
Oh, I know, smut doesn't matter. I enjoy smut.
But he also is extremely intelligent in the way he presents some of his jokes, like, sure, there's the flat-out vulgar joke, but off to the side here is an extremely intelligent classical music joke.
Yes. Well, okay. I like Bo Burnham because he is really smart, and his jokes are super clever. And the only thing, and this is not a criticism of his style of humor, because it involves so much writing in the production and creation of each piece, they don't have a whole lot of repeat value for me. I've found that I love Bo Burnham's songs. They're really funny. And some of them have a lot of just shock value stuff in there, but mixed in with the shock value is really intelligent humor, and I find it really funny.
Domain range.
Yeah. Once you wind up getting the joke and you've heard it a couple of times, it's not repeatable. So his stage act, is a really tough thing for him to do. You've got to commit a lot because he's got to be producing new material constantly. And so if you show up and he's doing the same bit you've already seen a couple of times, then, all right, not so great. But I really respect what he does. My personal favorite comedian, is obviously Kumail Nanjiani. I love Kumail. I could also, now, I love Kumail's, stand-up comedy. I like him as an actor. I like him as a podcaster. I just enjoy his body of work. But in addition to Kumail, and who, again, we got to see live at the Concert for Concert Against Humanity at Gen Con, and he was spectacular. He must have done 10 minutes just jerking with the interpreter.
This is masturbation?
Yeah, this is... No, okay, you can't just spit out the lines because they can't see the visuals. And we don't want to describe them in detail, so
okay,
let it go. Oh God, the frog's dead again. All right. So
what?
Oh, why is a frog like a joke?
Oh, okay.
So anyway, but I think I described all of this in episode 100. Go back to that one. That's where all my good material is. But
everything this point on is a letdown.
It really is. So he did so much really funny work there. It was awesome. But I also, I enjoy Patton Oswalt a lot. I enjoy, God darn it. Now I'm locked up on his name. The dude that does my Nerd Rage interlude, Brian Posehn. That's the guy I'm thinking of. I love Brian Posehn. I could listen to him forever. There's a lot of comedians I really like. Really, really fun people out there. I've developed a new, uh, a new appreciation for Carmen Esposito, who also appeared at the Concert Against Humanity. She was really funny, and I had not known anything about her maybe a month before that concert. And then she wound up being on tour with the Nerdist people for their comedy tour, and so I got to hear some stand-up stuff from her on their podcast, and I thought she was awesome. So I listened to a couple interviews with her, followed up on some of her other material, then got to see her live just by complete coincidence, and really enjoyed what she was doing. But there's lots of really good stand-ups out there, but Kumail is definitely going to be my number one. Gotta be. So. No. 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 No! 47. If this is a repeat, we're done.
It's not.
It's a repeat! Yes!
Is it? No!
In fact, it was
a... No, it's not! It's from... Oh, no, darn.
In fact, not only is it a repeat, but when we first read it, it was a repeat. So, alright, we're all done. You know what? I'm gonna go into the credits and try and keep R2 away from my son, and in the meantime, you guys can listen to GLaDOS giving us a recap of this episode.
Remember when the platform was sliding into the fire pit and I said goodbye, and you were like,
no way.
And then I was all, we pretended we were going to murder you.
That was great.
This podcast is copyright 2015 by Nerd Pride Radio. The opening and closing theme is Death Metal Disco by Ian Kronk. My bumper music this week, Weezer's in the Garage, and She Blinded Me with Science as performed by William Shatner. All of these songs are available on iTunes. Check them out. Buy them. Enjoy them. I would put them in my podcast if I didn't love them. If you want to get your very own Pocket Mod, go to pocketmod.com. Get your instructions for printing and folding them absolutely free. If you want to do something nice for this podcast, recommend it to a friend. Seriously, if you have enjoyed what I'm doing here, please spread the word. Please tell other people about it. Let other people enjoy it as well. I love new people. Don't forget to check out the free games I have available on my free games page. Instant Game, Animal Ball Melee, Sandbox Hill, 2/3 of a dozen others. All free, all the time. If you want to contact me, my email is mike@nerdprideradio.com. I'm on Twitter, @NerdPrideRadio. My Facebook page is facebook.com/NerdPrideRadio, which I am on Facebook all the time now. So that's a great one. But even better than that, the very best way to get in touch with me is you come sign up for my forums at nerdprideradio.com/forums. You sign up there, you send me a message, we will hang out together, we'll become best friends in the world, we'll have fun! And now it's time for Listener Betrayal. Before I start every podcast, I go out and post out on my forums and Facebook and let people know I'm recording. And if they want to add anything to this recording during the 90 minutes or so that I'm babbling on about stuff, they can post it up and I will read it right here, which is what we're going to do. So let's head on over to my forums, and hopefully there's actually people out on this Labor Day weekend. Well, actually not out. Hopefully there's people with no lives who are at home with nothing better to do than talk to me while I'm recording a podcast. You guys are my favorites. Don't let anyone else tell you different. And all right, let's post reply. Done. This does not look promising. I think there's only one here. All right. And it is from, yep, there's only one. And it comes from a man named DM Darks. Hi, Pat. Darks says, no, but seriously, how awesome is Gremlins 2, the new batch? Oh, shut up.
That yes, was DM Darks is amazing.
Yeah. Yes, DM Darks is awesome. But that movie is terrible. What is wrong with you? Oh, what, did you just watch it? Did you willingly watch that movie again? Is that what you're telling me?
I think he's tied to a chair.
Ugh, oh my god, wait a minute. Is that my missing pocket mod? Is that, it is. That's my missing pocket mod. How did I not see that? Not, oh, that's bizarre. Oh, that's
weird. It was
right
here.
It was laying right here on the table, right where I left it, and I came over here and looked because I thought that's where I left it, and it was gone, so I made a new one.
And I, that's not your missing one, that's your new one.
No, that's my missing one, because here's my new one.
Oh. Well, yeah, it's right here.
Yeah, weird. Okay.
It's been here for a while.
Apparently, I asked you earlier, and you said you didn't know.
You didn't ask me.
I did, too. You were in the middle of a game, apparently.
You did not ask me.
I so asked you. We're done talking about this. I so asked you.
You did not.
I did. Okay. Enough of that. Let's go over to Facebook. And see if there's anyone on Facebook.
Welcome to Nerd Pride Radio, the only podcast full of domestic disputes.
Oh no. There's no one. Oh, yeah. There it is.
Okay.
Whew.
Whoa.
I was so worried. Okay, Nelly likes my post. Awesome. But even better than that, oh my goodness, three people have commented on it. Let's find out who.
Okay, I thought we were going to have no material here.
I know.
Just like the rest of your podcast.
Jeff Hawes writes in, Jeff, is this your first listener betrayal? Because if so, welcome aboard. Oh, so good to see you, Jeff. Jeff says, please discuss the value of Berber rugs in the postmodern cyberpunk RPGs. Here's the deal. When it comes to rugs, really, they only have value in a cyberpunk RPG, either A, as a receptacle for evidence, all right, such as blood splatter or whatever else that may be caught, fibers, etc., things that you can use to track people down, or alternately things that you could be tracked down with, were you stupid enough to leave such evidence behind, or B,
as a nice modest floor covering.
Right. Well, no, nobody cares about that.
It's funny because it's a rug.
Is as in any role-playing game, any area rug that you can roll up, carry around as loot, and then sell for cash also has value. When you say the value of Berber rugs, I don't know what do they go for in Shadowrun. I mean, if I'm looking for let's say a nice, let's do a 7x10, something big for my dining room. What would that be? I mean, we're talking like a couple thousand New Yen in Shadowrun. I don't know. I've not priced them lately. You know what? You should ask Lucy. Lucy has been pricing area rugs.
If you want a real estimate, I think it's like 820 something Zenny in Dragon Ball Z.
Okay, well, it doesn't matter because
there's an episode about
Lucy has been pricing them in real life, and apparently, you can get them only moderately expensive if you don't mind child slave labor making your cheap area rug for you. Or
how's that different from everything else?
Or if you want a quality rug that's not made with slave labor, then apparently that's going to cost you, $30,000 or some millions. I don't remember the numbers exactly. I'm no good with numbers. You got to know me. Nelly posts up next. Nelly says, hi, Mike. Hi, Nelly. I do hope you make it to Gen Con next year. I'm already making a list of games to show you. Oh, you're so sweet that way. I really think I am. I'm hoping to. My wife has already made talk about figuring out what we need to do to get me there. My mom, who is now a listener of this, podcast, has heard my plight and has thought, maybe a birthday gift of spending cash for Gen Con might not be a bad idea for me because my mom is sweet and thoughtful like that.
Sweet and thoughtful like that?
Wait a minute. So you're saying my mom is not special?
No, I'm just saying
oh
that.
Oh my god, that is your Nana,
whoa,
dude.
Whoa.
That is your Nana.
What I'm saying,
after everything she has done for you.
What I'm saying is that you should come up with some original compliments so you don't sound like a broken record.
Wow. I love the way you try and push this back on me after you have been a complete douche to your
I'm
Nana.
Saying is that
that's your Nana.
All you could have done for that.
Nana, he didn't mean it, I promise.
Is take your words from when you said the same thing about Nelly, copy and paste that soundbite to Nana. It's
okay. This is hold on. My wife's here. Yes. What? Hold on. I'm gonna have to pause this so we can hear this explanation. Unless you want to come over and get on the microphone. Alright, hold on, guys. Okay. So that was my wife, who came out here unbelievably excited. I mean, I have not seen her this happy in ages. Why? She says, I should have been born English. Okay, you're going to have to explain further. She says, aluminium. Okay, you guys need some explanation? All right. My wife has a problem pronouncing the word aluminum. And cinnamon. Because aluminum and cinnamon, both, she has a problem figuring out where the word ends. It's just a little mental mental stumble that she has that aluminum becomes aluminum-aluminum, all right? Or cinnamon-aluminum, all right? And it just, it's a little mental block that she's had her whole life. It drives her crazy. And most of the time, I mean, she says the words and she says them just fine, but if she overthinks it or if someone's teasing her about it, because I'm a cruel person and I like to be talking to her about it and say cinnamon, and then she'll then get confused and then she won't be able to remember what the correct pronunciation was. And it's really funny. But she, now that's a rude gesture, Leisha. I can't, how dare you, Leisha? I haven't even been drinking. I just can't speak. All right. So she comes out and says, I should have been English. Aluminium. And I'm like, yeah, you're right. Because she's so excited. Because if she had been English, she could just use aluminium. She has no problem pronunciating that one. She has no problem with that word. And then she says, wait, is the other one like that too? And Aiden goes, cinnaminium? No, I don't think so. But now we've decided that the next magic weapon that they get in Pathfinder is going to be a +3 cinnaminium sword. It's going to be awesome. I have no idea what its properties are yet.
Fresh baked bun.
That's right. Ooh, it smells like rolls. I don't know what it's going to do, but I want a cinnaminium sword. I think that sounds great. All right, hold on. That was from, all right. Yeah, that was from my wife stumbling in. That's her own listener betrayal. But yes, I'm hoping to make it to Gen Con as well. I think we will have a great time. I'm really looking forward to it. It'll be awesome, 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 because the last one was. So, next.
And now we have a paragraph.
A post from Sarah Beth. And Sarah Beth says, WWMJD, what would Mike Jones do? Your child's school makes a change to the transportation schedule that leaves your 5-year-old child with no way to get where he or she needs to go after school, and no one tells you. You find out accidentally 2 business days before school starts, and when you call the school, they tell you, sorry for the inconvenience, and that we didn't think about that when reminded of your child's circumstances, but they offer no options. How do you proceed? Is this a personal story? I'm assuming that this is not a hypothetical. In which case, I would be throwing a fit. This is...
Isn't good life advice?
A change to the transportation schedule that leaves a 5-year-old with no way to get where he or she needs to go after school. Oh, that's insane. I don't know, because I'm going to make a guess that while it is a dick move on the school's part, it's, they forgot, and they should have warned you ahead of time, and, you know, had you known 2 months ago, and again, hypothetical you could be asking for a friend for all I know, or this could be some local story that's been an issue with the school system.
It's a hypothetical question. Just involved.
Well, I'm making the assumption that it's her, but it could be, I can't remember how old her oldest daughter is. Darn it. That's what I get for never meeting your children, I suppose. For whoever this is for, I can see where, if they had told you this, last spring, if they had told you this a month ago, you could have had time to make arrangements, and everything would have been okay, not ideal, but at least okay. You'd make arrangements. But now, 2 days before go time, and suddenly you're looking at, I'm going to have to take off work early for 3 weeks until we can get this sorted out. I'm going to have to... I have to rearrange all my other schedules, but I have other kids. How do I? I understand. But while, again, it is a dick move, they screwed up, they forgot, but probably, technically, they're going to be in the right, and therefore, there's nothing you can do about it, which sucks. What would Mike Jones do? All right. Me personally, if it happened to me, I can tell you exactly what would happen. I would wind up flexing out my own schedule, maybe even taking, a few hours leave time here and there, to make it work out until we can finally get it all sorted out and then, have some kind of permanent arrangements in the long run. But I have the flexibility of doing that because I've been a government employee for more than 20 years, and I get 5 weeks of vacation a year, and I can...
Five weeks?
You know, you didn't know that? Dude, I get a lot of vacation. I get 12 paid holidays. I get 5 weeks of vacation, and I get 5.5 weeks of sick leave that I never use the sick leave, so that's just going to pile up until I get paid out when I retire.
Or you get, like, those whatever.
Right, or if something horrible happens and I get some chronic long-term thing where I have to be in the hospital for 3 weeks and I wind up having to take a lot of time off.
The other thing. When you
cancer? You want me to get cancer?
No, the other thing. Those days that are mandatory that you have to take off.
Oh, furlough days? Yeah, but no. When you take furlough days, you're not allowed to take. You're not allowed to use any of your leave for them.
Well, I know, but like, didn't you have to take those?
Yes, that was just stupid budget cutting state bullcrap. Oh, because they wanted to save money, and they figured the best way to save money was by shorting their employees
by not paying you for a week.
Right, exactly. Well, and here's the thing: is that most of us in professional positions. They require us all to take a furlough day. So they have one day that they don't have to pay anybody. And so they save this fraction of an amount of money. But, oh, all of us still have to get all of our work done when we get back. So they get the same amount of work done. We just have to find other ways to do it. Now, again, my job, about a 3 or a 4. So that just meant that, oh, for a couple of days, my job bumped up to a 5.
I mean, 3.5.
Right. It's not, you know... And that's how they saved some money. It's just by not paying us for a day and then telling us all the work still
to do. Back to the bus schedule.
So again, I'm in a fortunate position where I've been at this job forever. I have lots of leave time available. I can do whatever I want, and I have a very understanding boss. I have an ideal situation for that sort of thing. Where if I said, "Hey, look, the school screwed us over. I'm going to need to work 7 days a week or 7 hours a day." I'm going to have to work 7 hours a day for the next 3 weeks until we can get this sorted out. And so I'll just be taking 5 hours of leave time every week. And my boss would go, oh, all right, whatever. That's fine. Or even if I said I need to take 8 hours of leave every week for a month until we get this figured out, that would be fine. So I am in a really privileged position where it's super, super easy for me. For someone else.
You'll be taking like a day of leave per month.
Yeah, you can do. Look. Yeah, you get a lot of flexibility here. I'm just saying.
Like, if you took off 8 hours a week, you'd still be only taking a day off your leave for every month. You could just do that ad infinitum.
Yeah.
Why don't you?
Yeah, I get... Okay, well, 5 weeks of leave is 25 days a year paid. So that would be one day every 2 weeks. I could just take off. In fact, there was a gal that did that, it was a few years ago, but she's one of those who had so much vacation time that if you don't take it off before the end of the year, you lose it because you can only have 7 weeks in the bank. And so she would, at the end of every year, she'd wind up taking off every Wednesday for like 3 months in a row. And she'd just work 4 day weeks for 2-3 months. And then she'd be back under the limit. She'd be fine.
That's the best day to take off.
It really, well, for her it was because her husband's weekend fell in the middle of the week, so he always had Tuesday and Wednesday off, so she just took off Wednesday to be with him.
But yeah, also I'm saying is it's like work Monday, Tuesday, take Wednesday off, Thursday, Friday, 2 day weekend, Monday, Tuesday.
I know, you never get too stressed out that way. Yeah. Anyway, but back to Sarah Beth's conundrum, which I am avoiding because I don't have a good answer.
At least you're honest.
I really wish I had a better answer for you. I mean, I'm telling you what I would do, but very few people are in a position to do what I would do, especially if it's someone who, I don't know, just had a baby a while back and probably used up the majority of their leave time and doesn't have that sort of flexibility. Again, Sarah Beth, assuming that this is you, again, I'm assuming you don't have a whole lot of leave time built up at your job, and your husband, it's not like he can just leave school. He's got commitments that are there, things that have to be covered. My wife's a teacher. I know what the problems are with, look, you have to be there for the full school day, and then there's meetings afterwards and extracurricular activities. And, you know, when you're already getting the summers off, the school isn't all that flexible about giving you a lot of, you know, free vacation days during the course of the school year. So I get that. I don't know what to tell you.
Where's Eli?
Wait a minute. I have, oh, Eli is over at Zach's house. Okay. He's spending the night at a friend's house.
All
right. Aiden got home from work. His brother's just been completely missing. It takes him until now. It takes him 5 hours to go, wait a minute, I'm missing a brother. Tell you what, I've got a solution. I've been spelling it out this whole time. I can't believe I haven't seen it. I have the leave time. I can drive up and get your kid after school every day. Get your kid, take her home. Or wherever it is she needs to go. I mean, well, look, as long as I'm there, I mean, I'm assuming you're having her taken to a babysitter, but why don't I just bring her to your house and I'll just hang out. I can entertain her for an hour. And then you guys will be home, and then I can go home. I think.
You're being, like, so, like, sarcastic right now.
No, this is a win-win for everybody. Now you're making this out to be something mean on my part.
To that, you're being so salty.
No, I am. Oh, darn it. I thought that would be sweet, but apparently I'm being mean, my son says.
It's funny, because they live far away.
It's, yes. Yeah, but they live in my old stomping grounds up in New York.
What are you, T-Rex? Your old stomping grounds?
Yes. God, all right, you know what? Thundar. There. I win. But I didn't put a dun in here. Let's see if anyone's posted anything while we've been talking. Nope, not yet. So, let me do a dun and close out the Facebook post. And that is the end of it. I like that post, and I like that post, and I like that post. Awesome. Hey, Noah.
Yeah?
Can you yell good night?
Good night.
Aiden, say good night.
Good night.
Good night, R2. All done.